Welcome to Dakota Midday on South Dakota Public Broadcasting. I'm Carl Gerke. Coming up, we'll talk with author Larry Tai about the 75-year history of Superman, and singer-guitarist Gordy Pratt joins the program as the ghost of legendary Deadwood Sheriff Seth Bullock. But first, it's Wednesday, and time for our weekly discussion of the latest in state politics with the Dakota Political Junkies. Joining us today is John Hunter, publisher of the Madison Daily Leader. John, welcome back to the show.
Thanks, Carl.
Also with us is Kevin Wooster from the Rapid City Journal. And thanks for your time, Kevin.
Hey, Carl. I'm so happy to be here. I can hardly sit down.
All right. Well, we've got some interesting things to talk about. I guess first, Congresswoman Kristi Noem announced yesterday that she'll seek a third term in the House instead of running for Senate in 2014. And if she had chosen to run for Senate, she would have faced former Governor Mike Rounds in the Republican primary. John, is this good news for Republicans since it will prevent a tough primary battle?
Well, probably. You know, all those primaries can be divisive, as we saw, as we've seen several times. You know, the kind of the Janklow Abner one might. I mean, there've been a variety of them that have been, and there also can be expensive, where you spend a lot of money fighting a primary and not have as much money then for a general election. So I would say probably.
Kevin, do you think this is something the Republicans would have rather avoided?
I think they certainly wanted to avoid that. And if you've got John Thune, who I understand was kind of involved in this process of talking to folks, including Kristi Noem, you know, he was a Jim Abner man, and he would certainly remember 86. Although I think Republicans who think the reason they lost that election in 86 was because of the primary are kidding themselves. I think Tom Daschle would have run that election. It was his time. He was played the farm bill as well as you can play it. And as much as I admired Bill Janklow for his political skills, I think even if he'd won that primary and gone on to face Daschle, he'd have lost. Nonetheless, I think it left a divide there that hurt the party for a while, although you might not know it right now looking at it, because they're lined up with a great chance to take all three congressional seats next year.
John Hunter, how serious do you think Kristi Noem was about a possible Senate run?
Well, that I don't know. We do know that she considered it, and all these candidates or all these people think about these things all the time. How far it got, I don't know. But I think there's really a temptation for relatively short-termed members of the House to consider the Senate when there is an open seat like this. And, most of our kind of long-term members of Congress served a lot more years. You know, I can't remember exactly, Kevin might remember, but I think Tim Johnson was maybe 10 years in the House. I think Carl Mundt was 10 years in the House. John Thune and Tom Daschle, I think, were at least 6 years each. So there's a temptation to just rush in there when there's an open seat, because that's maybe your best chance of doing it. But I think building up a career in the House, I think, will bode well for her.
So, Kevin Wooster, it sounds like this was probably a wise decision by Kristi Noem.
I think so. I mean, I think there was probably a difficult one there for her to make, because I'm sure she was getting a lot of support from conservatives who have their doubts about Mike Rounds in terms of some of his government growth issues and tax issues and those kinds of things. And I'm sure Mike Rounds loves this, because Kristi Noem could have raised millions in a primary race with a few calls. I mean, she has proven she can really raise money, and she's a pretty good campaigner. Mike Rounds is an extraordinarily strong candidate to come in for an empty seat, you know, but he didn't want to battle with her, I'm sure. He wanted to gear everything towards that general, which is, he comes in certainly. He could have a couple of challengers from the far right, but I don't think anybody seriously considers them likely to beat him in a primary. And without Stephanie Hirsch-Sandlin in the race, he now heads for the general election pretty much as a clear favorite.
Well, if this is good news for Republicans, then does it mean it's bad news for Democrats, John?
Oh, not necessarily. Let me rephrase that. if they lose that seat, it's clearly a loss. But I think Stephanie Hirsch-Sandlin is still a viable candidate in the future. There's been no harm for what she's doing here. I think Brendan Johnson probably would be a sound candidate in future years. So I don't think they've lost their pool necessarily, but I'm sure they'd be disappointed that it didn't get. Although, did they want a primary too? I don't know. Sometimes when you have one candidate, you can focus on that one. But from what I understand, is the trying to draft Brendan Johnson or asking Stephanie was maybe what the party was looking for. But Rick will run a strong campaign too, and it's a long campaign. I mean, it's a year still till the primary, and if there's no primary, it's another, 16 months or something until the general election.
Well, as the Senate race seems to be finding out more and more about who the candidates will be and who they won't be, some of those big questions starting to be resolved. Now I guess we turn to the Democrats and the House race in 2014. Kevin Wooster, any Democrats that you know of who might be interested in entering that race?
Well, I'm sure there are some that would be interested in. I had a conversation with a Democratic friend of mine who's a real smart, astute observer and has been a past practitioner of the politics in the state, and he said, I asked him about the House race, and he said, it's Noem versus nobody. And he hated to say that as a Democrat, but whoever, without Stephanie Hirsch-Shannon, without Brendan Johnson at this point, his feeling was, and I tend to agree with him, that it is going to kind of be Noem versus nobody, and it'll be somebody that's not well known, that's probably not well financed, and he went, we can say as an aside, it could end up being Dugard versus nobody too in the governor's race, but it's, you talked about whether this lack of a Noem rounds primary is bad news for the Democrats. I don't know if it's any worse than the Democrat news is right now, with or without it. I think a nasty high spending primary had the potential to do some benefit for Rick Wyland, and at least spend down some of those reserves that either one of those candidates would have had to take into the general. But I don't know how that you could find any worse news for the Democrats than where they stand right now. Brendan Johnson certainly has the potential to be a viable candidate in the House race, but with Noem staying there, I can't imagine he would do that in 2014.
John Hunter, is that the way it looks like to you as well?
Well, yes, except that there are times when candidates kind of pop out that I'm not aware of or I just didn't consider for that. Really, when Kristi Noem first ran, she was, I think, just a member of the state legislature without, she wasn't in the top leadership position or anything. I don't think anyone thought that she was a shoo-in, and then she ends up beating a very popular incumbent.
I thought she was
a variety of circumstances.
I had her listed as a nobody, John. Shows you what I know.
So there might be someone out. There's not a lot of Democratic state legislators, but someone might pop out and be a viable candidate. It depends on how well they campaign and how well they raise money and what things they've done in previous positions. So I think something could pop out. I don't know what it is.
Well, we've got more than a year to find out yet, so we'll stay tuned to that. The U.S. Senate passed a five-year, $500 billion farm bill on Monday. South Dakota senators split. Democrat Tim Johnson voted for it, and Republican John Thune voted no. The farm bill had bipartisan support. Thune wrote part of that bill. Kevin Wooster, why did he vote against it?
Well, that's a good question. It's one that I'm trying to figure out right now. In fact, I had a conversation with somebody on the phone not too long ago about what was the things about this year's farm bill that he disliked enough not to vote for it and compared to last year's. And this person said, I'll tell you what it is, it's 2016 and the presidential race. He's concerned about how this might play out for the hard right if he ends up in a presidential primary, either as a presidential candidate or as a vice presidential candidate. And I don't know if that's true because this is a Democrat talking. So it's, when you're looking at how many pages is it? 1,000+, I'm sure, and pretty complicated and a lot of money. And I'm not exactly sure. The senator, I believe, said that he was concerned about some commodities subsidies amendments that he wanted or an amendment that he wanted voted on, which he didn't get. And of course, he blamed the Democrat or the Republicans for that. And the Democrats turn around and blame the Republicans for not allowing certain votes. You know how that game is played. But in the end, I think we see this through a prism of 2016 and just about anything that involves John Thune, because as a couple of my Democratic friends said, one of them who has a national profile on you know, political punditry, said he's the best candidate the Republicans have for president in 2016.
John Hunter, do you think that's partly the case anyway, that Senator Thune looking ahead to 2016?
Again, I think all candidates think about all things all the time. I mean, I think they consider that, but I'm not necessarily sure it's driven. Again, I think most people in Senator Thune's position are being pulled a little bit. You know, they're being pulled from the right to be that strong conservative candidate, which he generally is, but you have to also be moderate to win any other general elections. So there's a balance there that goes back and forth. And you know, in the case of the Farm Bill, he did have amendments that were accepted in this, and so it does seem a little bit funny. But this is part of the trouble with having an omnibus Farm Bill like this, which includes, you know, food stamps and a whole bunch of other things. And what do you do if you like, you know, 100 provisions and you don't like 80 of them? And in a lot of cases, you do vote no. But, you know, Senator Johnson said, look, we got to pass a Farm Bill. That's just necessary. And I think he's saying that it doesn't have to be perfect, but it has to be passed. So, you know, if you have all these provisions, and I'm sure Kevin read all 1,100 pages already, but
I'm at 762 right now.
So that's the trouble when you get that things that big, that they get pulled in different directions.
Well, that Farm Bill now goes to the House. Kevin, will it face the same problems as last year when the bill didn't make it to the floor?
Well, I think it faces a lot of politics, you know, an issue like that, and especially one where you connect farm subsidies and farm insurance programs and conservation programs and all this with the core, of course, in terms of how much is spent, which is the nutrition programs. And man, does that set up a conflict between in members with a two-party system with more conservative, more progressive / liberal policies? It sure does. And there's no place like the U.S. House of Representatives for conflict.
Plus urban versus rural.
Urban versus rural, yeah, very good point.
And John, do you think it makes any difference that unlike last year, this isn't an election year? I think that'll help.
Boy, I mean, I think a lot of people don't have confidence that the House will. I mean, last year they couldn't even muster up the energy to vote on the thing. The House committee passed it, but I believe. But anyway, Representative Boehner says we're going to discuss this. We want to vote this time. So I don't know if that's any confidence of getting something done or not. It's just hard to say. I mean, with the gridlock that we've seen the last few years, it's. You can certainly see the possibility of extensions and not a new Farm Bill.
In other news this week, Republican politician Alice Cundert died on Monday. She was 92 years old, and people may remember her as South Dakota State Auditor for 10 years, beginning in 1968, and then Secretary of State until 1987. Kevin, you wrote about her a little bit in your blog for the Rapid City Journal, Mount Blogmore. What was her impact on South Dakota?
Well, I think the most enduring thing for me was that she always called me and my brothers the Wooster Boys, no matter how old we got. And so I hold on to that and hope that she's a sweetheart for that. But, you know, obviously she was early back in the 70s, which is when I started being involved in writing and reporting in South Dakota. She was one of the women elected officials who had a place in South Dakota in the discussion in state issues and who had a profile. And, you know, she carried that so well, and she was so committed to doing a job apart from politics while at the same time being so committed to her Republican Party and developing that party and especially inspiring and assisting the youth in that party. And I love people that are able to take a leadership role, and in her case, it involved both her gender and her party, and also the small-town roots that she had, and still managed to do her job as an elected official. And there were just so many times when I didn't feel like I knew her as a Republican elected official, but simply as an elected official. And those are parts of her legacy that I think are really matter to this state.
John Hunter, did you have much connection with Alice Cundert?
No, but I mean, I observed her a lot, and I amplify what Kevin is saying, that she bore that leadership so well and really, I think, broke down a lot of barriers for women. I don't know if that was her goal, but for the breakthrough positions that she was taking, she represented it very well, and I think really set the stage for future political offices held by women in South Dakota. And she was a hard worker, and you know, and all those good things that you look in for in South Dakotans, she had them, and you know, was, you know, she was a clear speaker. I mean, you know, when she said something, she would be clear about it. There was never any wishy-washy. But I think she really bore that standard well.
One thing that you touched on, Kevin, was Alice Kundert's relationship with the younger South Dakotans, and she was very active in the teenage Republicans, and she was quite beloved by younger Republicans.
Oh, very much so. And I think, as I wrote in that blog piece, there are thousands of people out there grieving and remembering, and so many of them met her as young, interested in politics kids, who found that guidance and that energy, because she was an energetic woman. And as John said, a plain-spoken woman, and the kids always knew where they stood, and they always knew where they could go in this state and what they could do if they had that drive that she tried to instill in them. So is there a way that you can affect a society any more than working with its youth? I don't think so, and she certainly did that well.
So how important is it that there are politicians like Alice Kundert who work with younger people?
Well, if you don't have that as a society, what do you have, really? Because that type of leadership, especially from people that have proven their ability to be balanced and fair and to take their jobs seriously and apart from their own egos, that's the kind of leadership, I think, and that's the kind of example that we want set for our kids.
Well, Kevin, thanks so much again for joining us on Dakota Midday.
Good to be here. Thanks, guys.
And John, thanks for your time as well.
Thanks, Carl.
Kevin Wooster is a columnist and reporter for the Rapid City Journal, where he also writes the Mount Blogmore blog, and John Hunter is publisher of the Madison Daily Leader. The Dakota Political Junkies are a regular Wednesday feature of Dakota Midday. You're listening to Dakota Midday on South Dakota Public Broadcasting. I'm Carl Gerke, and coming up after a short break, we'll talk with author Larry Tye about the 75-year history of Superman. And later this hour, singer-guitarist Gordy Pratt joins the program as the ghost of legendary Deadwood Sheriff Seth Bullock.